Sam Ackerman is in Tauranga, our sports commentator. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's all about the Robertsons today, but before we get to the rugby coach, let's talk about what's happening with two brothers and the impact that one's ban is having on the other athlete.
Yes, so for those who follow track and field or keep an eye on those type of things, either personally, professionally, or just through an interest, the Robertson brothers have been they're twins, they're identical, they are, they both moved from Hamilton to Kenya at, I think, 17 as teenagers to try to further their long distance running ambitions. Both married to Kenyan ladies at different points, and they took very similar viewpoints on the systematic doping within athletics, particularly in the Kenyan area where they were. So they've been kind of considered to be one and the same, and quite often because they followed such similar career trajectories, but. If you weren't really interested in that, you might not have ever heard of them. You probably have now. So Zane Robertson has just been banned for 8 years for EPO. Now, that is longer than you would normally hear. Usually it's a four-year ban for a substance like that. So it's not the doping that got him the eight-year ban as much as it is the incredible lengths he went to cover this up. Now, this is like Lance Armstrong level deception without the money behind it to make it drag on for a decade before getting caught. He essentially said that the EPO got in the system because he went to a Kenyan hospital, asked to get the vaccine, but they gave him the treatment, which is how he got EPO in it. He forged a bunch of doctors' notes and certificates. It was a very elaborate lie that he led everybody down, including Drugs Free Sport New Zealand. When they investigated, it all fell apart pretty quickly with names and numbers didn't match up, and eventually had to cave. He has spoken recently in a podcast where he said, look, the reason I did it is that 4 years and 8 years, as far as the line goes, the 4 years and 8 years is no difference. It ends my career. So I was scrambling to do what I could from one dumb mistake to see what if I could salvage my career. And he couldn't. He says he likes to think that quite a few other people in his circumstance may have done the same thing, which, of course, comes down to a lot of personal interpretation. The drug taking, he is also vented, saying, look, the reason he did it, he said, why should people like him lose out on contracts, miss out on opportunities? Victories come with money, which is a part of fueling a career that isn't exactly hugely funded. So he essentially was sick of everybody else taking shortcuts and the good guys losing out. So he cheated and he got caught. He's insisting it was his one and only time. He points to his clean track record before that as an example. So it is a very sad case. The Robertson twins have always strived for a bit of recognition. They've run with a chip on their shoulder a little bit. It's been part of what their makeup is. It's unfortunate that twin brother Jake is dragged into this. It's a very murky situation, and he is lashed out because he's losing sponsorship opportunities, and they look identical. They do the exact same profession, and absolutely, even though he has done nothing wrong, of course he's going to get tarnished with that same image, and I feel devastated for him and what it means. And I don't want to say I've got sympathy for a guy that took EPO willingly to try to get a boost, but there is a human element in what he's talking about. When you talk about the Lance Armstrongs of this world, he didn't need to keep taking drugs and to keep winning and keep making all that money. This was literally a guy doing it, in his words, in his description, to try to get something to keep his career and his life from spiraling out of control. So very similar to the emotions I felt about Lou Vincent when the match fixing saga came out, where there was did the wrong thing, no question, not getting any excuses or a letter of a jail pass for me. But there's some empathy towards his reasonings for it, and it does speak a lot to the current state of professional sport as well as athletics.
It's an extraordinary situation, isn't it, that a sibling, an identical sibling's situation so directly impacts your own. Now, let's stay with that athletics, and this has just come through, I think, this news this morning, which is to do with track and field and a ban on transgender athletes from international competition. There are new regulations accompanying this as well, Sam?
Yeah, so look, this is all pretty fresh information, so we'll keep it at a bit of a general level, so there will be more details, I'm sure, to be looked into. It should be pointed out as well, so the World Athletics Council, who runs track and field throughout the entire planet, and as well as the obviously, as it spills into the Olympics and those high-profile events. They have followed their swimming counterparts by banning transgender athletes from international competition. They did that today. And it's basically anyone who's gone from male to female, chose that transition, has gone through male puberty, is banned at that level. There is no one that fits that category at the highest level right now. But, of course, this does impact through far more than just the top flight. And they've also changing the rules around the what they call the differences in sex development athletes. And of course, many will know Caster Semenya, the most famous athlete and fits in this category. Basically, she won't be competing anytime soon, Semenya, because they are saying that there need to be a hormone repression treatment done and then a 6-month stand down to compete. Having done that previously to fit previous guidelines, Semenya said she'd never do it again. So these are obviously massive, massive decisions that are a lot more about humanity than it is just sport. But it is done, according to Sebastian Coe, their head, to protect females in sport, to
protect
stop
the female category, were his exact
category,
words.
That's right. Yeah. To look after that section that have become very vocal in the past, 12, 18 months, that that they end up competing against athletes who identify as female but have had the benefit of testosterone and the different stages of puberty or the like to lift their, their base to a higher level before transitioning. It's obviously a very emotion-charged topic at the moment, and there was no answer that was going to please everybody at any stage. So I see this as a bit of a watershed moment, and I think there's going to be repercussions felt through this for a very long time. When swimming did it was one thing. I think track and field, where there was seen to be potentially more of a high-profile crossover, I think this is going to be debated and challenged in courts, in my opinion, for months and years to come.
Well, finally, the saga has reached some sort of a conclusion, and Scott Robertson is to be the next All Blacks coach. What's going to unfold now? Is he going to keep a low profile? He's got to begin planning strategically, thinking about players, thinking about what he wants to do with his squad, but he's got to do that with respect for the fact there's still a World Cup campaign to come. I guess the most immediate impact, of course, though, is on his own franchise, is it, and others?
Yeah, so look, first of all, Scott Robertson is a very smart individual. He stayed pretty stum about the whole All Black thing, besides his ambitions, until that little grenade he threw earlier this year. And I think that little grenade has an impact of where Scott Robertson stands right now. I think it's quite strategic, and it forced a hand that has him in the decision he wants. But I also think that he knows that if he starts sticking his nose in and speaking really publicly about the All Blacks now, the court of public opinion, for which he is the crowned king, could start to turn on him slightly if they think that he's not allowing the All Blacks to be the All Blacks in this situation. So he's smart. I don't expect him to stick his nose in. And if Ian Foster's smart, he should just say right from the get-go that he wishes him well, but he's not talking about anything to do with the All Blacks post this year, and just keeps maintaining it. If he doesn't bite, then I think the story can fade and we can actually just talk about coaches in charge of the teams they're actually in charge of. As far as Scott Robertson, obviously the Crusaders now were always going to need a new head coach. There's talk that they may need some more support for their assistant coaches. Everyone who's linked to Scott Robertson to come join his new look All Black coaching staff in 2024, there can't possibly be enough spots for everybody that's linked. It's incredible. But he has spoken about the desire for loyalty, which leads the general consensus to those who were thought to be associated beforehand. Now, that's Leon McDonald, who's worked with them before, of course, and is the Blues head coach currently. And Jason Holland, again, was considered to be in on the ticket when he was hopefully, in his mind, getting a crack last year. That didn't work out. He was supposed to go too. He's the Hurricanes head coach. So that means three of the five franchises will be looking for head coaches at the same time. We see that in football and in the NRL when there's coaching merry-go-round. Suddenly, people just start trying to lock people in where and when they can, and decisions are made on the fly. So this is going to have a butterfly effect, the Scott Robertson effect, right through the entire Super Rugby competition. So after holding the entire test world to ransom, now it's time for our Super Rugby and potentially our domestic game, because all those replacements are going to come potentially in from the provincial sides as well. So It's going to be a very intriguing 12 months, more like 8 or 9 months, because you know those Super Rugby seed will need to act, because Robertson's going to need to announce his team to give those teams enough time to change. So it is it's going to stay messy for a while, and yeah, that's how it goes with New Zealand rugby right
Look,
now.
Look, it is, but at least it's done, and Ian Foster now just needs to eyes on the prize for the World Cup and set himself the goal of winning it.
And I don't like to admonish journalists, but I think, you know, after that initial frenzy of tell us what you think, Fozzie, I think after that they just need to kind of move on from it too and not keep bringing it up. Because I actually think that the public's going to get sick of it if they're not already very, very soon. So there's initial interest once he's back and getting his thoughts and maybe talking to the players when they're first in the camp about knowing what the deal is. But after that, it's a World Cup year. I mean, surely we don't need to be thinking what the plans are beyond that. This has always been the pinnacle in his cycle, and we've always, as a nation, not looked past that to our detriment at times. So I think it'll be right.
The final of Super Rugby Aupiki, and what's it looking like?
Well, look, it's the competition, and this is by no fault of the players, certainly hasn't reached the heights that people would have hoped directly after the Women's Rugby World Cup last year. A 5-week competition where everybody plays each other once, and then every team who plays as part of the semi-finals doesn't give an imperative to those games in the hugest possible way. But the final has been decided, and Chiefs Manawa are backing up again after winning so comprehensively last year, and there's been no signs at all that they wouldn't be the A finalists and B winners of this competition. But the real, the good story that to go with it in that regard is they're taking on Matatu, and that is to find a who's going to be the champion. Now, to come from Matatu represents the entire of the South Island, by the way, and they were wooden spooners last year, came dead last in the pre-VAD competition, and here they are with a chance to win it. So, you know, good on them, and what an effort. But I still think that this competition, if they weren't going to do it longer, should have been held at the business end of Super Rugby 2 rather than now. There's going to be a 3-month break after this final before the Black Ferns get together. So I think that there's no momentum, A, for the players, B, for the coach, or C, for the fans. And I feel like if they'd been in the business end of games at the same time as the Super Rugby games, there may have been perhaps a high level of things on the line for the public to feel that kind of engagement, because that's where the rugby was at that time. The calendar was not so much now, and also they can go straight from Super Rugby Aupiki into camp with the All Black, the Black Ferns, and then into Test matches. I felt that would have potentially allowed for a better run, but that hasn't been the case. I know a lot of people have been disappointed with how it's played out, but hopefully these women get the spectacle and the respect that they have worked so hard for in Saturday afternoon's final.
We've talked about the Black Caps papering over the cracks. They've done so pretty effectively the last three tests, you'd have to agree, and good on them, because we do know there are some shortcomings in their lineup at the moment. Bit of a come down for, from this amazing test series into limited overs, but you're arguing that there's plenty of interest and importance left to them.
Yeah, look, I think they had poured a bit of concrete into those cracks, didn't they? So there was, they definitely did the right thing with finishing off that test series with Sri Lanka. It does feel like a come down into the limited overs. But look, first thing to take into account, the game of the first of the 3 one-dayers at Eden Park tomorrow is also a big fundraiser for the Cyclone Gabrielle relief fund as well, and donations coming in left, right and centre. Your tickets, if you buy a seat, you get to go, and you're making a contribution. Of course, there'll be other ways of raising funds too, so that's great that there's a real cause for people who can make it to Eden Park to support, and of course around the rest of the country as well. And not to mention that this one-day series is the last one-day series the Black Caps will play before the squad for the World Cup is picked, essentially. So there's a lot of players who could potentially be viewed at on the bubble, and some would argue more should be on the bubble than they are. So this is a chance to put your hand up for selection, and it could, this could be the moment that decides whether they go, do you know what, we're going to stick to our guns and not pick Trent Bolt. We're going to be happy with this pace team if the pace lineup can deliver. It's hard to imagine leaving Bolt out of that World Cup squad, but stranger things have happened, and a lot of players can stand up and prove themselves over the coming days.
Just finally, let's finish with the Warriors, and what is coming up? They're back at Mount Smart for the first time this year.
Yeah, so they had their first home game was down at Wellington when Harry Styles took ownership of Mount Smart for them. But they are now back home for the first time, and they're coming home with a bit of anticipation. They've played three games, won two, lost one, but they've been consistent. They had their first win in Australia since April, Catherine. The way they've been playing, a win in Townsville is very difficult. So to beat the Cowboys was exceptional. They are minus a few key players. Four of their frontliners are out. But there's something under this Andrew Webster, the new coach, this era, that feels there's a consistency, there's a patience, there's an understanding that they don't have to go out there and blitz a team. They can put that team under pressure and wait for it to crack. So I think it should be a really a great homecoming against a Bulldog side that is on the up, but beatable. There's a real anticipation amongst Warriors fans, which again is nothing new, but no one's standing on top of chairs yelling it's our year. People are just excited to see this team come to town for a consistent basis rather than an ad hoc drop in. It should be a fun afternoon.
Good one. Thanks so much, Sam Ackerman. Plenty to look forward to this weekend.